My name is Cal C, and today on The Stoop, we talk about the least controversial issue in the world, a topic that everybody loves to talk about with the greatest of ease. That's right, we talk about race. I invite educator Vidal Chavanez and consultant therapist Jonathan Boxhill as we discuss the events from Charlottesville, Virginia, our thoughts about the state of the race climate in 2017, Donald Trump and his influence on this climate, plus much more. To listen to this podcast, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. Race. Today on The Stoop, I welcome back educational consultant and author of the book Detox, which you can order wherever books are sold. Please welcome Vidal Chavanez to the show. What's going on?
Nothing much, man. Thank you for having me, of course.
Yes, no problem. My second guest is a former psychotherapist in hypnosis with over 17 years of expertise as a facilitator, trainer, counselor, and more. He's currently running a training and consulting firm that doubles as a resource for frontline staff for community agencies. He also wanted me to introduce him as the baddest mother on the planet. But I told him I would never allow it, so we had to settle for this intro instead. Please welcome Jonathan Boxhill to the show. Jonathan, what's good?
Thanks, bro. Honor being on your show, bro. Thank you.
All right, no problem, man. No problem. Thank you. Thanks for coming on the show anyways, guys. So the podcast today is about race relations and how it's sparking up controversy like never before in the last few years, from the police in the U.S. shooting unarmed black people to whatever you want to call this newfound energy that Donald Trump has seemed to have inspired since becoming elected president, which has emboldened a certain section of people out of the woodworks like never before. But one of the commonalities from everything that we've been seeing lately comes right back down to race. Now, before I go further, I think everybody's still reeling from what happened out in Charlottesville, Virginia, where the alt-right and neo-Nazi groups had a protest due to Confederate flags and statues being taken down, which not only sparked major controversy, but an anti-protester also lost their life. So I just want to get your thoughts on the Charlottesville incident from what happened from last weekend anyway. So I'll start off with you, Vidal. What's your thoughts? What's your initial thoughts when you saw that?
Well, I mean, initially when you look at it, you know, it makes you angry. But I was saying that, you know, when I turn on the news now, I sort of waver between being really angry and just being disillusioned by what I'm seeing. You know, kind of sad. I think it's crazy to think that we live in a time where people feel empowered to march in the streets arguing for white supremacy. It makes me feel like we've gone back in time. And that's not to say, you know, we all recognize that the United States is a racist society, not just the United States, but that's what we're talking about now, is a racist society. It has been since its inception. It continues to be. But the fact that these individuals feel empowered, and then not only feel empowered to do it, but the president of the United States then gets onto his phone to argue and gets in front of cameras to argue that many of the people marching there are actually good people.
Right.
I mean, it's tragic almost, man.
And what are your thoughts, John?
Yeah, I agree. I do feel, though, this is consistent with Donald Trump. I feel like, in one sense, it's shocking. I mean, are we really living in these times? Is this like a dream? At the same time, we saw this throughout his whole campaign. So part of me is like, you shouldn't really be surprised. He was fueling that. This was a lot of his base. You know, this is the stuff that came out of the man's mouth before. He was allowed to get away with it. And he wasn't really checked. He's come this far. So to me, it's definitely within his character, and we shouldn't be surprised. I feel like this really does get me fired up. I feel this is showing people the ugly face of white supremacy for especially black people who are really comfortable. Mm-hmm. And a lot of black people are very comfortable because, you know, we own our own home, maybe. Maybe we made middle class income and we feel like some of this stuff doesn't affect us. And I think we've been lulled to sleep with that sense of comfort. Because I know I've had conversations with a lot of black people about white supremacy in the past, and if, you know, they'll talk about it, but it's not something that's in the forefront of their mind. I feel like these events are forcing these things to be at the forefront of our the conversation, at least. Mm-hmm. For people to recognize, who are very comfortable, that this is what's going on in the world, this is what's running the world right now, and this is the face of it. What was hidden is now being revealed.
Right.
What are you going to do about it? You know, what are we going to do about it?
And I know we've had this conversation offline before, but, and that's what I think. I agree with you in that sense, where I feel like a part of me thinks that this is a good thing, just because you want to see the snakes in the grass and you want them to show. You know, I made the analogy that, you know, I'd rather see the weapons that are in front of me than the ones that are behind my back. You know, and even though we know that, you know, the evils that we're fighting before, but in this day and age, I guess, seeing this pop up now with like some of the white nationalists and different things that are coming up, a part of me is like, you know what, this is good. We gotta check this situation out. I think we gotta address this head on as black people, of course, but are there gonna be other entities and other races or other groups that are gonna like make this their responsibility as well? I don't know. We'll have to see. But like, a part of me thinks that this is a good thing for us to see. All this stuff coming up, and the media, social media stuff is making this, is forcing us to really have to look at this and have these conversations, at least more so than we ever did before, you know, which sure. which I think is good.
Yeah, I hear what you guys are saying, man. I will disagree a little bit. I recognize the argument that it's important to see an enemy in the face, to know who the enemy is, etc.
Right.
But I mean, social media didn't just show up with Charlottesville. So I mean, if you pay attention to social media, you'll know that, you know, these white supremacist groups, these alt-right groups, neo-Nazi groups, whatever they call themselves, mm-hmm. they have been in existence. It's not like they haven't been there. The issue, again, to me, is the fact that they feel empowered, and then not only do they feel empowered, but then immediately after they march, they get empowered, not just by the president, but by the silence of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you go back to social media and you read some of the comments, which I try to stay away from always, but the comments, man, like even up here in Canada, the peaceful Canada, I mean, the sentiments that are expressed, and it's not a surprise, of course, the sentiments that are expressed are very similar to what you're hearing. The difference is, again, is the empowerment and the feeling emboldened enough and empowered enough to stand up without covering your face, to walk in the streets with cameras in your face, and to behave the way that they've behaved. That, to me, signifies a step backward, for sure.
Right.
And I don't celebrate it the same way. I don't feel like that's a win, because we can see it, because I knew it was there already.
Right.
I don't feel like that's a win. You know what I mean? I hear what you guys are saying, but I disagree just a bit.
We always knew that it was there. I think all three of us always knew that it was lingering, and you know, obviously we ain't the only ones that thought that way. But but I think, just I guess the rest of society is kind of like,
yeah.
Oh, maybe you guys weren't lying about this.
Mm. Yeah. You know? Like for me, I mean I've been in different circles for a couple of years talking to different, you know, black people, from professionals to dudes on the street. And really, a lot of people that I've, you know, kind of hashed it up with, yeah, they've faced racism in their life, and they understand that they're dealing with a racist system to some degree, but it's never motivated them into some type of action. It's never been in the forefront of their conversation. They just go back to their daily life trying to survive or whatever it is they're doing.
Right.
So I really do feel like this emboldened step, which in a sense has definitely taken us backwards, has also ignited something in people, because people need to be shocked. People need to be shocked. Our people are so asleep right now. It's crazy. You know, in Toronto alone, Alvin Krilling did that report on the roots of youth violence, racism. Mm-hmm. We know about social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. mental health is a huge problem amongst the black community. Mm-hmm. Roots, a lot of the roots of that, racism. A lot of these youth are not doing well in high school in Toronto. A lot of them are leaving school early. A lot of them being pushed out of school early. A lot of them having problems. We know the roots of that, racism. So we've been crying that. We've been saying that for a long time. We've been talking about white supremacy, but there's a segment, I feel, of the black population, and maybe that's just our community. Our community has been kind of fragmented and divided, where we haven't been able to come together and say, hey, this is a problem. Or let's really motivate or mobilize ourselves and see what we can do. And I feel like it takes a shock to wake people out of their sleep. Otherwise, people will just talk about it and maybe hash it up on social media and then go back to their lives feeling powerless, feeling like victims, or just distracted by, you know, the Monday night game. So this is, so I do feel we need some type of, not me, maybe not you, but trust me, there's a lot of sleeping dead people out there that really need to be woken back to life.
Yeah, I think what Calvin said, and based on what you're saying, is I hear the argument that it can wake up people who have been asleep, absolutely. I mean, I'll disagree with you a little bit, because I think the black community has been very vocal in their fights against racism in education and the criminal justice system,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
I think what Calvin was saying previously, though, you know, other communities have not necessarily joined us in the fight or believed it to be the same kind of problem that we believe it to be. And maybe seeing what happened down there and seeing what happened in Quebec today, there may be more of an understanding of what folks are going through.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not entirely sure that's the case. We'll see. Hopefully it kicks people into action, but in this day and age, 24-hour news cycle, something else might kick up, and you know, I don't know how much of this will be remembered. I hope it does kickstart people into action.
Yeah, and I mean, and we spoke about this last year when you're on one of our Snoop episodes, talking about the episode was called "The Socially Responsible Athlete," and you know, we've seen this matter bleed into sports, where, you know, obviously Colin Kaepernick took a knee for injustices for black and brown people, which started a major controversy and discussion, which at the same time, it almost predictably, he's paying for it now by being unemployed from the NFL. But unlike the days where a player would just get cast aside and everybody would just move on with life, it's kind of a little surprising to me that it's actually started a movement within different athletes, where they're also trying to now at least speak up and take a stance, including the NFL, which I'm seeing this preseason, where guys are still sitting out, you know, taking a knee or sitting down during the national anthem, when they're surprisingly keeping this movement going. And at the same time, you have now this year, in contrast with last year, you're seeing some of their white teammates now showing support. So I bring this up to ask this, like, do you guys think that, I guess I've asked this question before, but do you think that, like, white people or other races of color have to visibly show support in order to spearhead this energy further? Where this discussion stops being a discussion and real progress and actions are being actually made.
I guess it depends on what your goals are. I mean, to be honest with you, there is a segment of our population that just wants our community to come together. And I mean, if that happens, because we are fragmented, like Jonathan said before,
right?
If we do come together, then, you know, there's less need for others to join in the fight. It's better if they do, and it can move quicker if they do.
Yeah.
But if we were to come together, we could make the change that we need to make. But again, I have very little hope that other communities are going to be joining the fight against white supremacy the way that we would hope, based on the incidents that took place down south.
Right.
I wonder if, based on what happened in the United States, if you believe that's going to translate into some real tangible, you know, benefit to our community, you know, where brothers will be able to get jobs or get mortgages, or young black girls and boys will do well in school and not drop out. I mean, I'm not necessarily sure. I appreciate the energy of the protesters in Vancouver and the ones in Quebec who are standing up to the alt-right when they try to march. I just wonder if that same energy is going to be put on display when we start to argue for more inclusive education, or, you know, a more fair and just criminal justice system. I'm not sure if I have that feeling that that's going to happen.
Right.
This is the thing. It's how do we take this momentum and actually put it together in a unified, coherent, strong front that actually gets things done. For me, you know, before we even do that, I would say, like, I specialize and I'm passionate about the mind and working with young people, working with families and our communities. That's where I always start. So when I hear about white supremacy as a system, I also recognize that that's internalized, right? That white supremacy, that theory of dominance is internalized. So when I see those statues being pulled down and everyone getting excited about it, I'm more about, well, it's great that the statues are being pulled down, but we need to tear down the internalized dominance within us. We need to tear down those statues that are within us. Those that ingrained, I'll call it a programming of white supremacy, mm-hmm. which creates things like seeing our brothers as enemies, distrusting each other, not allowing us to see greatness in each other, not even allowing us to listen to a black man without finding fault in another black man, you know? So mm-hmm. this is real stuff. There's studies that show that, you know, we, even conscious people, are programmed at an unconscious level to see greatness in white people and to distrust black people. These are documented studies. So to me, if we're tearing down these statues, these symbols of white supremacy, we have to tear that down in our minds. We have to do the work, the inner work as well as the outer work, so that we can begin to work together. Otherwise, it's just us dragging our we're still carrying that legacy of white supremacy within us.
Right.
If you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, and that makes me a little bit concerned about making the only enemy Trump. Because when Trump goes away, the system continues.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, I of course want to get that distasteful bastard out of office, but but when he goes, the system that he represents remains.
Exactly.
And so that's important for me to recognize, and I'm sure clearly other people recognize it as well. I just hope that all those 20,000 people recognize it and recognize that there's a system behind these individuals who are out with torches. Mm-hmm. And because when they put those torches away, they go back to work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They go mm-hmm. back to work driving a bus. They go back to work making food for you in a restaurant. They go back to work teaching your children. They go back to the mm-hmm. bank and determine whether or not you get a mortgage. And we have to keep mm-hmm. that in mind. And they have to keep that in mind as well. That it doesn't end because they put their torches away, or we make them put their torches away. Even though that's a win, it's a win, but that's not the whole game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're silent soldiers. They'll right. put their torches away and meet in silence, mm-hmm. and plot in silence and blend in. They're silent. We have no problem standing together and linking arms. And I remember seeing that in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember seeing that we almost had some race war thing in high school too, and all these guys linked arms together that knew me or knew different brothers who were like, you against us? You? And I was like, whoa. So I recognize that they're able to come together. I feel like everyone's waiting on us.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is this latest wave of what we're seeing now, is this going to spark the change where that happens, where our community starts to really come together? I don't know. I hope. I'm being optimistic, and I hope that's what happens. But, you know, it's history's shown that that's going to be a lot easier said than done. But I agree with you, Vi, that it does start with us.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, I tell you, think it's going to get worse. If we don't, if we allow it, it's going to get worse and worse. And we'll really have no one to blame.
And I do got to say, though, and I mean, we kind of talked about this yesterday. I mean, the whole thing with Donald Trump, I mean, you knew it was going to be bad. Like, you knew when he got elected, you knew it was going to be bad. I didn't know it was going to be this bad, but you knew it was going to be Like I was like, this is gonna be on some Bush stuff, like George Bush Jr. type ish. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean the fact that his whole cabinet's like in shambles, and I mean I've never seen anything like that. Like you don't even, maybe on like an episode of 24 you might see, you know, people just resigning and quitting and stuff, but you don't see that in real life. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think there was a belief at some point that, you know, if he won, that he would all of a sudden stop the campaigning and become quote unquote more presidential. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Act more like what one would expect somebody in that office. And I agree with you, man. I've been surprised at his level of ignorance. I actually didn't I didn't know that he was that ignorant. And I mean he's ignorant. Like it's not even the fact that he's, you know, allying himself with white supremacists. I actually just don't think he's a very smart man.
No.
And I think that he's surrounded himself with people who will say, oh yeah, you know, they're just making up news against you because they hate you. Really, you know, the people love you, and they just keep feeding him all this stuff, and he just takes it in because he doesn't read and he doesn't really watch the news and he doesn't know what's happening in the world, and he just takes it in. What they say to him, it's bizarre. I've never seen anything like it either, man.
But
it's troubling on a whole different type of level.
The thing with white supremacy is, just like we internalize stuff, they internalize their false sense of superiority. Mm-hmm. So when you're raised in that environment all your life, basically as a spoiled child, you can do and say what you want and run over people, and there's really no consequences. You're basically emotionally a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. And you see it with him. It's so easy to poke at his ego and to get a response.
Yeah.
It's so easy for him to that he's falling on his own sword. So I agree with you when you say that his lack of ignorance is surprising, because they paint him to be some big time businessman and some big time dude who knows stuff, and you're like, this is like a 5-year-old. Mm. He has no self control, and he's used to getting his own way. He's used to bullying people, and he's used to living that privileged life. That privileged lifestyle where people around him are yes men.
That's right.
And you get to say you're fired.
Yeah.
And that's why I think so for him, that's why he's, you know, he'll be gone at some point and the system will remain. I think the biggest issue facing the larger community is to be able to properly confront racism in society. At some point you have to recognize, if you have benefited from it, that you have benefited from it. And where it always stops, not only in the United States, but in Canada, where the conversation always stops is when you start to point out that the system is racist or that the system is biased against particular groups. Then the dominant group has to admit that they have a role to play in it. And what they want to say is, I'm not racist. I'm a nice person. And the conversation just cuts off right there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it gets to a certain point. Yeah. That's why I'm saying, yes, communities will go out. Thousands of people will go out. They'll stand in front of these guys and say, you're not going to light those torches in my neighborhood. I'm just concerned about the conversation elevating from that point to say, we are going to properly confront the systems that create division, that create injustice in our society. And I'm quite sure that we haven't arrived there. And I mean, I'm hopeful that we can get there. I'm not sure that this is going to be the catalyst that pushes us to that point. Mm-hmm. To me, it will likely get worse before it gets better, like Jonathan said.
The scary thing about life is showing me is that, you know, I look at it in a sport term where it's like, you know, I always said the analogy that your team follows the actions of your leader, right? And I think that's what we're kind of watching in real time with Trump, that the way Trump is acting, he's quote unquote the leader of the free world, right? And I feel like this is what people are following. They're following the actions of a jackass, you know what I mean? And like, we're seeing it in real time. You know, we're seeing people being, you know, empowered and emboldened in real time. Like, it's crazy to see, you know, especially coming off of what we've seen the last 8 years with Obama and how, you know, they ran their presidency. And, you know, you're watching this now and it's like the actions of what he's doing is now affecting other countries, you know, and how they act and stuff. And, you know, to me, that's where, like, it's scary to see, you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah, But that didn't start with Trump, man.
No, so, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah. Obama was the first, when Obama was first elected, it was the first time in the history of the United States that the opposition party publicly said that they wanted the president of the United States to fail.
Yeah.
Like that has never happened in the history of the country.
Right.
Normally, even if in the back of your mind that's what you want to see happen, you never say it publicly.
Right.
Because you don't want to be regarded as somebody who is cheering for the demise of your own country. But that's what's happening right now, is that people are willing to allow their country to go to hell because they refuse to combat what is clearly ineffectual is a good word for him. Ineffectual leadership. I mean, you can't, as a reasonable person, look at the way that he behaves and believe that to be what you would want your president to be doing and saying. I mean, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. But people defend it. They defend it and they fight for it. And yeah,
which is insane.
It's crazy, man. But I mean, Jonathan will know, like, as somebody who's studied the brain, people will do crazy things sometimes when they feel like they have some affinity towards it, or they feel like if they don't, that they're personally being threatened.
Right.
And I don't know, man, but it didn't start with Trump. It's not going to end with Trump.
No.
I can't wait for him to not be president, but the system will remain when he leaves.
And that's the scary thing, because if he leaves, you got Pence there, and I mean, he's not, that option's not much better. You know what I mean? So I think it's really dependent on the people. It's dependent on us to actually start making these changes, even from locally to, you know, to, and let it grow to a major level. But I mean, that takes a lot of time too, you know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward. The last question I'll ask you guys is, where do you guys feel we are as a society when it comes to race? Just between the constant coverages and social media replaying footages, opinions, think pieces, commentaries from just regular folks to celebrities. As we mentioned before, the discussion is out there. Whether it's the right discussions we need to be having or not is one thing, but you know, it's out there at least. And I mean, that's at least a start. And I'm not saying this to say, like, let's celebrate that fact and we're going to be popping bottles for that, of course, because I mean, again, it's a very small start, but it's at least a start. So where do you guys, I know it's a broad question, but where do you guys feel we are, like, at this point, and what other improvements can we make to, like, actually make this a full scale change?
I don't know, Jonathan, you want to try this one first, Bert?
Oh, man, I was hoping you were going to go first, bro. Alan, you leave the heavy question to the last, right?
I know, honestly.
I had to.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think we're at a place where those, I don't want to say superficial because they're still important, but we're in a place where we can share information with one another regularly, and that comes with some benefits. Mm-hmm. We are able to see things on video that we wouldn't see before that add credibility to some of the things that people have been crying about for centuries.
Right.
Now, whether or not that has made legitimate, lasting, fundamental, systemic change, I think is where we're having the issue. And so, are we in a better place because we can confront issues on social media today when the system still hasn't changed, I guess, is the question that you're asking me. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the answer is we are not that much better off.
Right.
Now, people aren't burning a cross on my lawn. I'm not necessarily worried that when I walk out of the house, somebody is going to kidnap me or my children and we'll find ourselves hanging on trees. Not that that doesn't happen, but it happens mm-hmm. very a lot less than it used to.
Right.
But the systemic issues that keep certain people down in our society and don't allow them to progress to the levels that they should continue to exist. So where we are as a society with race is where we have always been. There are those who are empowered and privileged and those who are not. And those numbers grow exponentially on both sides, so the ratio remains the same. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that explains what, I don't know if that answers the question. I'm not necessarily sure how much systemic change has been made over the course of the last 50-60 years, man. Mm-hmm. And that's it's a shame.
Yeah, there's no right or wrong answer, but you know, I just mm-hmm. figured I'd ask that question. What about you, John? Said,
one no, more
sorry,
thing.
Go ahead.
No, sorry, man. I mean, I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I really do believe that there is hope. And like you guys were saying earlier, and like I'm saying, I hope that some of this nonsense that we're seeing happening now becomes a catalyst for a real effort to address the inequities in our society, because we have a real opportunity here to be a beacon of hope for the world. And I don't say that lightly. I really do believe that in Canada, we have an opportunity to be an example of how we can live in peace. We have to make sure that we're all committed to that goal. And I'm not sure that we're there yet, right. But we do have a real opportunity here, I think.
All right, and John, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't really believe or think or even see that we've made so much progress as people say. I mean, I feel it's gotten underground, and our people have been kind of lulled or complacent, like I said before. So I don't know. I feel like the race relations, it's at a point where we need to have those difficult conversations mm-hmm. with each other. I was at in my workplace the other day, an incident happened where somebody of another culture made a comment to a sister who's very Afrocentric. So he picked the wrong sister. He said, it was not in a negative way, but it definitely was a negative statement. He said, you know, they're talking about Canada, the 150. And he's like, well, if you have issues with Canada, you should go back to Africa. You don't tell a sister to go back to Africa, right? Mm-hmm. But he didn't mean that in that way. He meant it like, well, I should go back to my country too if I have an issue. So, you know, that was a really uncomfortable situation we were all in. But what was nice was she and another brother sat him down and explained to this dude how what he said was problematic. And, you know, historically that's been used towards people of, you know, African descent who were brought here without, you know, wasn't brought here because we had a visa, right? So at the end of the conversation, he was in tears. And he was like, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it like that. I just meant it like, you know, we should blah, 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 go back to our countries of origin and all this stuff. So I just say all that to say there is hope. I think when we are brave enough to have those difficult conversations, and I think it's the fear of white supremacy. This white supremacist has built up so much fear of their dominance and hopelessness and powerlessness that we have to recognize our power. And sometimes it's in those having those difficult conversations that make you feel uncomfortable. Speaking out when you need to speak out. And it can be difficult if you're the only one. I know a lot of us have probably been in those situations for sure.
Right.
But there's something powerful that happens when we regain power within ourselves. We face a fear within ourselves. It's almost like that fear that's outside, you know, representing Donald Trump or whatever, you've crossed it within you. You've handled, even if it's in a small way where you challenge something at your work, or you challenge something, you know, in conversations with people, just to conquer the fear, I think is a big deal. I think if the more of us do that, it can go a long way towards at least changing our psyche. Mm-hmm. This is where I'm interested in. The psyche of Black folk is damaged. There's this real fear of their dominance and our lack of power.
Yeah. Social media helps with that a little bit, because you don't feel as alone if you're standing up for something.
Yeah.
It can help. Sorry to interrupt you, bro.
No, you're right. And that has been a powerful tool. the thing though is when you're not in social media and you're by yourself or you're in the real world, you know, and like that happened at work, it was difficult. The sister was in tears. He was in tears, and it was uncomfortable for all of us. It was like, no, you cannot let that stand. It was kind of our test, you know. It was our test at the moment. Oh, you guys say you're educated and you're this, and well, here's someone that clearly disrespected you guys in a different type of way. How are you going to confront this? Are you going to let this pass? So I feel everybody has to do that in their own little way. Not just black, but other races too. You right is right. Like, it's just those little conversations that was so powerful that shifted the whole dynamic, that actually brought that person closer to us and broke down the fear. Because, you know, there's a lot of fear around, there's just a lot of fear around standing up and taking your power.
Right.
There's a lot of fear around that. I don't mean to go on. I just want to say one last thing, that for a little thing, for example, like these black beauty stores that are not owned by our people, and they're sold and marketed towards our people, towards sisters, and we don't control it. You know, I could never sell pasta to an Italian person and say this is authentic pasta. I could never do that. I could never sell, you know, an authentic dish to an Asian person. They'd look at me funny, like, what are you appropriating my culture? But we allow that, billions of dollars. And when I talk to sisters about that, you know, they just feel like they're disempowered. They can't, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. I'm like, what do you mean? All you sisters spend your money every month, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And y'all don't, and with black products, and y'all don't control that store. Y'all aren't even allowed to touch the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Not even allowed to touch the cash. So I just bring that up to say that this is a small thing that we feel is such a big wall, but we need to cross it. We need to take a stand in little things. And then I think we'll start seeing our power. Like, hey, you know what? We do have power to shut things down. We do have power to make us, to get our voice heard. But we have to cross that fear. And sometimes it's a fear of feeling that you what's going to happen if I do? That fear of thinking that I'm powerless. We have to get over that fear that white supremacy is stamped in our mind, that they're so damn dominant, the system's so damn dominant, and shit we can do.
Well, I'll just touch on this really quickly. I mean, I think that point that you shared about your story from your coworker, like your coworkers, I should say. And I think that's the kind of thing that Vidal's kind of talking about too, which is it's a beacon of hope that, you know, maybe 10 years ago that conversation, you guys aren't sitting down having this conversation, educating your coworker as to why, you know, you shouldn't say those things or explain the situation where it might have been tears. Like 10 years ago, you might be like, man, you know, Bob's an asshole, and and that's the end of that, and that's it. You know what I mean? He goes right on his way, and you know, so the fact that this conversation is being had, I think is important. I think that's good. That's a start. You know, as I was mentioning before, it's a start. And to touch on what Vi was saying before too, I think the positive again is that social media is helping to drive this conversation, because, you know, these videos, these conversations, these commentaries, they're literally in your pocket waiting to be clicked now. You know what I mean? So
right.
It doesn't take much for you to click on a couple of videos, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and oh my gosh, that happened? You know what I mean? And it's forcing you to actually, you know, see this, you know, just visually forcing you to see this now. So I think that's where social media is really important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I would piggyback on some of what you're saying, I think relationally, we're in a better place than we were before, to circle back to the question that you were asking. I really do think that there has been improvement in our relationships, the way we communicate and our ability to express and to provide evidence to support some of the things that we have been, you know, arguing about for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I do think relationally we're in a better place. My concern, however, is that has not necessarily yet translated into systemic change.
Yeah.
And I really do think we have an opportunity for it, but it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, that will be the true measure of whether or not we can arrive at a place where we build a more just society for everybody.
Yeah. And let's hope this is something we see in our lifetime. You know what I mean? And you know, our children and stuff are leading this new world, this new diverse world where this conversation is a thing of the past. We're not having this conversation anymore. The things are just happening. You know what I mean? So let's see what happens going forward. I think that would be a great thing. But I'm hoping in our lifetime we do all experience that actual, you know, real systemic change. We got to champion that movement going forward. On that note, fellas, thank you so much for coming on the stoop today and having this conversation on race, which isn't always the easiest conversation to have, but you know, I'm glad to do it with you guys for sure.
Thanks for having us, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
And you guys didn't even like want like some food or nothing, man. I'm impressed, man. I'm impressed.
Reg and I always want food. I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, no Pilori's this time. No Pilori's this time. Sorry. All right, thank you, fellas.
All right, man.
No problem, brother.
Thank you all for tuning into The Stoop and lending me your time and your ears. I'm grateful and appreciative as always. Shout out goes out to Vidal Chavanas and Jonathan Boxhill for sharing their insight on the race climate, Trump, Charlottesville, and everything else that comes along with such a heavy topic. While it's sad to keep having this discussion over and over again, I don't think it's a subject we can run from anymore. Race is still a real issue to those that may be unaware, and it's never gone away. But in 2017, I think this topic has been at the forefront of popular culture. It's sitting right in front of us, and it's forcing more people to speak on it than usual. And personally, I like that. And I like that there's this new energy that's here right now. It's our job to convert dialogue into action, however, and make sure that this topic of race eventually becomes past tense. It's going to take a hell of a lot of work. A hell of a lot of work. But it's not impossible. Hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I'm glad that you tuned in. Once again, to listen to more podcasts, as usual, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Vidal Chavanas and Jonathan Boxhill, my name is Cal C. And you just tuned into The Stoop, a mini podcast summer series on South Shore Ave Radio. Also, rest in peace to Dick Gregory and condolences to his family. Until the next podcast, people, peace. We out.